and welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters, and today we'll look into the subject of the prank phone call with the governor of Wisconsin, who thought he was talking to David Koch. There's tremendous aftermath, of course, to this in Madison. We'll talk to the leading political reporter in Madison. And before we do so, though, I'd like to invite you again to the Hammer Forum this evening, Cuba after the Castros. I'll be hosting Max Lesnik, a friend of Castro's, a revolutionary colleague, and Annie Bardak, the biographer. So do come, 7 p.m. tonight, free and open to the public. Now let's go to Madison, Wisconsin. I'm speaking with Bill Leaders, who is the news editor of the Isthmus, Madison's popular weekly newspaper. He's also been elected president of the Wisconsin Freedom of Information Council, a statewide group devoted to protecting public access to meetings and records. And he's written several books, and his latest of which is Watchdog, 25 Years of Muckraking and Rabble-Rousing. Welcome to Background Briefing, Bill Leaders.
Thanks for having me, Ian.
And your piece that you filed on the Isthmus since the revelation of the prank phone call, which the governor himself held a press conference about yesterday to acknowledge, although he said...
Well, actually, his press conference is just to restate the same arguments he's been making day after day after day. He did have to deal with questions about the phone call and the question and answer session, but he did not bring that up until he was asked about it.
Sure, and then he basically said he didn't say anything in private that he wouldn't have said in public, which, of course, is not true.
Well, it's flatly untrue.
How, you know this guy, how could he be this gullible?
To take this call, it's kind of mind-boggling. If you really listen to the conversation, it's a transparently fraudulent call. This guy is pulling, you know, what they did on Sarah Palin last year, that our governor, first of all, was not more mindful of this possibility, and second, wasn't smart enough to see through it as it was happening, is really pretty shocking.
Well, I'd like to play some of the clips as we talk about it so that the audience gets a feel for this phony conversation, which, frankly, when I heard it, I thought, my God, you know, how could he believe that this guy was David Koch? Presumably, he must have spoken to Koch in the past, since the Koch brothers are the second biggest donors to his campaign.
Mm-hmm.
How do you explain that? Did the guy sound like David Koch?
I don't know if he sounded like him, because I haven't had the pleasure of talking to David Koch. I would assume that our governor has. Maybe it was just wishful thinking on his part that he was getting an attaboy from one of the richest men in the country and one of his biggest benefactors.
Well, let's play the clip of the first thing that got my attention, which was Governor Walker's discussion about his strategy in terms of Wisconsin politics, and then we can talk later about national strategy, where he talks about how he's trying to peel off this one wavering Democrat, Tim Cullen.
Now, you're not talking to any of these Democrat bastards, are you?
There's one guy that's actually voted with me on a bunch of things I called on Saturday for about 45 minutes, mainly to tell him that while I appreciated his friendship and he worked with us on other things, tell him why I wasn't going to budge. Mainly because I thought he's about the only reasonable one over there, and I figured if I talked to him, he'd go back to the rest of the gang and say, you know, I've known Walker for 20 years. He's not budging.
Now, what's his name again?
His name is Tim Cullen.
All right. I'll have to give that man a call.
Well, actually, in his case, I wouldn't call him, and I'll tell you why. He's pretty reasonable, but he's not one of us. So I would let him be. I think he is in a position where he can maybe motivate that caucus, but he's not an ally. He's just a guy. He was in the Senate years ago. He was actually the Senate Democrat leader back in the 80s, and Tommy Thompson hired him to be the head of Health and Human Services. He went into the private sector, made real money, and became a little more open-minded. And last fall, he got elected to the Senate seat he was in 25 years ago. And he's kind of one of these guys who he really doesn't care. He's not there for political reasons. He's just trying to get something done. So he's good to reach out to for me, but he's not a conservative. He's just a pragmatist.
So, Bill Leaders, again, the news editor of the Isthmus, Madison's popular weekly newspaper. Is this fellow that he's talking about, Tim Cullen, clearly he's got to be embarrassed at this point. Was he...
By he, do you mean Scott Walker has got to be embarrassed?
No, I'm thinking Tim Cullen, if it's true that he's, you know, a potential turncoat, what's your understanding about what's going on with him? Is this the governor's wishful thinking, or is Cullen the weak link?
Well, the 14 Senate Democrats that have left the state of Wisconsin rather than allow this budget repair bill to be passed all say that they're united and they're holding firm. And the expectation is that one of them will, in fact, cave, will cross state lines. Maybe he'll return for, he or she will return for a change of clothes, and the state police will be able to put the, him under, him or her under arrest and drag them back to the state capitol so that a quorum can be reached and a vote can be held. And the governor certainly is hoping that one of them will be vulnerable to the pressure that he's applying on them every way he can. Whatever state senator on the Democratic side who does cross that line and is the one who comes back, if indeed that, that is what happens, will be on one hand the subject of tremendous hostility from tens of thousands of people who are demonstrating against the governor's bill, and on the other hand can pretty well be assured of some pretty cushy perks from the governor and Republicans. He will be handsomely rewarded for taking that step.
But he'll be recalled later, right?
Who will be recalled?
The senator who did this. I mean, there's a recall provision, isn't there? That they're talking about using a recall provision which begins in a year from the time that Governor Walker took office to unseat
right.
the governor. Now, presumably, he can also unseat other politicians, right?
Oh, sure. You can have recall petitions. There have already been recall petitions that have started, but they've been against the 14 Senate Democrats who have left the state. I don't know if those are viable recalls, whether there's enough support for enough opposition to their leaving the state. Certainly those people are tremendously popular. They are heroes among the tens of thousands of people at our state capitol. There's signs and there's a great deal of sentiment in favor of the Democrats who have decided to leave rather than to allow this bill to pass without even minimal discussion.
So, Bill Leaders, when the governor, in his talk, in his phone conversation with the phony David Koch, when he talks about how the New York Times actually did what he considered fair coverage, even though they're part of the dreadful liberal media, that people in the rest of the state, not necessarily in Madison, are sympathetic to him. What's your polling on that?
Well, there's not a lot of visible evidence that the governor has widespread support for this budget bill. The state is split when you take an actual, you know, are you in favor or against. In terms of the passion that's involved, it's overwhelmingly on the pro-union and anti-Walker side. In terms of the turnout, for instance, last Saturday, the Americans for Prosperity, which is a group that is funded by David Koch, staged a rally at the state capitol, and they brought in busloads. They organized buses of people to come from, you know, Wausau and Milwaukee and other communities in Wisconsin. They managed to bring somewhere between 3,000 and 5,000 people for a rally at the state capitol. The total turnout last Saturday at the state capitol, according to the Madison Police Department, was 68,000 people. So the pro-Walker demonstrators were outnumbered by the anti-Walker demonstrators by a factor of more than 10 to 1.
And Bill Leaders, what did you make of his reference to the Democrat that they're trying to peel off as not being one of us? Is this, do you think, indicative of a kind of a cult-like solidarity that exists in the kind of Tea Party? Because my understanding is that this Governor Walker was in the Tea Party before there was a Tea Party.
Well, you know, Governor Walker is very conservative. He's very much a religious conservative, and he, you know, has always been to the right. I think it has greatly surprised many people who know him that he was willing to pick this fight with public employees in the state of Wisconsin. It is really quite the step. He understands it's a bold move. I think he thought that he would become a national darling among the Republican right for taking the step. I think that this phone call does, you know, seriously undercut that because he looks, frankly, like such a fool.
Well, you know, but John Podoros at the Weekly Standard was only a couple of days ago was talking about Scott Walker as potential presidential Republican presidential material. So presumably that's blown up in his face. But
He's probably more likely to be popular on the national level and be a viable candidate on the national level than he is to be a viable governor in the state of Wisconsin. As far as I'm concerned, his ability to lead the state of Wisconsin is forever compromised. There is nothing that Scott Walker can do from this point forward that will be unopposed. There will be tens of thousands, even hundreds of thousands of people who feel bitter enmity toward him and will do everything in their power to bring him down.
Well, Bill Leaders, again, the news editor of the Isthmus, Madison's weekly paper, you've written in the Isthmus that he revealed in this prank phone call, the governor revealed a kind of national Republican strategy. Let's go to the section where that becomes apparent.
You know, we've had in all the national shows. We were on Hannity last night. I did Good Morning America and the Today Show and all that sort of stuff. Was on Morning Joe this morning. We've done Greta. We're going to, you know, keep getting our message out. Mark Levine last night. And I got to tell you, the response from around the country has been phenomenal. I had Brian, the new governor over in Nevada, call me last night and said he was out in the Lincoln Day circuit the last two weekends, and he was kidding me. He's new as well as me. He said, "Scott, don't come to Nevada because I'd be afraid you'd beat me running for governor." that's all they want to talk about is, what are you doing to help the governor in Wisconsin? You know, the next question, I talk to Kasich every day. You know, John's got to stand firm in Ohio. I think we can do the same thing with Rick Scott in Florida. I think Snyder, if he got a little more support, probably could do that in Michigan. I mean, you start going down the list. You know, a lot of us, there's a lot of us new governors who got elected to do something big.
You're the first domino.
Yep. This is our moment.
So, Bill Leaders, it seems as though, I mean, I think it's pretty clear, isn't it, that this is a national strategy, and Wisconsin is the canary in the coal mine.
Absolutely. I mean, he even agreed with the fake David Koch that this is the first domino. Governor Walker sees Wisconsin at the vanguard of a national movement to crush public employee unions. This is obviously going on to a lesser extent in other states right now. He's hoping that Wisconsin can create the paradigm for the destruction of public employee unions in other states, which will make him a big hero among this group of people. Now, why do they want to do it? The best speculation that I've heard, the theory that makes the most sense to me, is that public employee unions are such a tremendous force on the side of Democratic candidates and causes. They pour a great deal of money into elections on behalf of Democrats. They bring volunteers to the process. If you get rid of collective bargaining, which is really what is at issue in Wisconsin, unions no longer matter. They no longer do anything for their members. And one part of the governor's bill says that anyone who doesn't want to pay union dues anymore doesn't have to. So he will strip public employee unions of their funding. He will strip them of their relevance. He'll strip them of their ability to be a force in electoral campaigns, at least in Wisconsin, from this point forward. That clearly is the goal that the Republicans have and why they see Wisconsin as such an important battleground.
Well, it's pretty clear to me from this conversation that this governor, his 15 minutes of fame have gone to his head. And let's play the clip of where I think some very troubling things are brought up by the phony David Koch, and that is the idea of putting provocateurs in these crowds. Now, what I saw on television were very peaceful demonstrations with people bringing their children out. The idea of provocateurs in the midst of that raises some very troubling questions. Let's go to the clip.
But what we were thinking about the crowds was planting some troublemakers.
You know, the only problem with because we thought about that, the problem with, or my only gut reaction to that would be, right now, the lawmakers I've talked to have just completely had it with them. The public is not really fond of this. The teachers union did some polling and focus groups, I think, and found out that the public turned on them the minute they closed school down for a couple days. The guys we got left are largely from out of state, and I keep dismissing it in all my press comments, saying, they're mostly from out of state. My only fear would be is if there was a ruckus caused, is that that would scare the public into thinking maybe the governor's got to settle to avoid all these problems. You know, whereas I've saying, hey, you know, we can handle this. People can protest. This is Madison, you know, full of the 60s liberals. Let them protest. It's not going to affect us. And as long as we go back to our homes and the majority of people are telling us we're doing the right thing, let them protest all they want. So that's my gut reaction, is that I think it's actually good if they're constant, they're noisy, but they're quiet, nothing happens, because sooner or later the media stops finding them interesting.
Well, not the liberal bastards on MSNBC.
Oh, yeah, but who watches that? I mean, I went on just Morning Joe this morning, but I like it just because I like being combative with those guys. But, you know, I mean, they're off.
Well, Joe's a good guy. He's one of us.
Yeah, he's all right. He was fair to me. I mean, the rest of them were a little out there. Although I had fun. They had Schumer over from New York on ripping me. And then they had a little clip of a state senator hiding out ripping me. And it was almost too easy. I walked in, Joe asked me a question. I said, well, before I answer it, let me just put out the amazing irony of the fact that you've got a United States senator from New York, a senator who, by the way, is part of a team that can't seem to balance the federal budget, talking about my budget. At least he's coming into work to talk about something, although it's mine. And you got one of these 14 state Senate Democrats who can't even bother to show up and deal with the budget he's elected to do something about. And so that kind of tells you the whole story right there.
Beautiful, beautiful. But you got to love that Mika Brzezinski.
Oh, yeah.
Again, I'm speaking with Bill Leaders, who's the news editor of the Isthmus, Madison's popular weekly paper. What do you make of that clip, Bill? Because it does raise some very troubling questions to me.
Well, the governor tries to minimize it. He says, oh, there were lots of things that were considered. And when he said, yes, we consider that, to the fake David Koch suggestion that they plant troublemakers in the crowd to create disturbances, he said, oh, you know, it's just one of many things that came up. And then you note that we said no to this idea. But when you hear that, what he is saying isn't that he has any moral qualms to having troublemakers planted in the crowd in order to create discord and even violence. He doesn't have any qualms about putting people at risk. His only objection to it, as he says, is that he doesn't think it's necessary in order for him to achieve his aim. So that's why he's rejecting it. This statement from the fake phone call, has drawn a very strong rebuke from the chief of police in the city of Madison, who wonders why a governor would even consider creating unrest in a volatile situation and putting at risk his officers' lives and the lives and the safety of other people in the demonstration. I think people here are just, again, really just shocked by what that says about Scott Walker and how far he is willing to go.
And, of course, the rest of the clip that we played, they segue into discussions about Mika Brzezinski.
Yeah, right.
I mean, this guy, this provocateur, the phony David Koch, he's really nailed a few people, Andrew Breitbart among them, you know.
Well, he certainly nailed our governor.
That's for sure.
That.
Well, the last clip that I'd like to play, Bill Leaders, is the one that wraps it up, where the governor talks about Ronald Reagan and this notion that Ronald Reagan firing the air traffic controllers had something to do with the fall of communism and the Berlin Wall, which is so historically confusing. Now, I don't know what to say about that. But it also ends with essentially the phony David Koch offering him a bribe. So let's go to that clip.
Well, good. It's good catching up with you.
Yeah, well, thanks. This is an exciting time. This is, you know, I told my cabinet, I had a dinner Monday right after the 6th. Came home from the Super Bowl where the Packers won. And that Monday night, I had all my cabinet over to the residence for dinner. Talked about what we were going to do, how we were going to do it. We'd already kind of built plans up, but it was kind of the last hurrah before we dropped the bomb. And I stood up and I pulled out a picture of Ronald Reagan. And I said, you know, this may seem a little melodramatic, but 30 years ago, Ronald Reagan, whose 100th birthday we just celebrated the day before, had one of the most defining moments of his political career, not just his presidency, when he fired the air traffic controllers. And I said, to me, that moment was more important than just for labor relations or even the federal budget. That was the first crack in the Berlin Wall in the fall of communism, because from that point forward, the Soviets and the communists knew that Ronald Reagan wasn't a pushover. And I said, this may not have as broad of world implications, but in Wisconsin's history, little did I know how big it would be nationally, Wisconsin's history, I said, this is our moment. This is our time to change the course of history. And this is why it's so important that they were all there. I had a cabinet meeting this morning. I reminded him of that. I said, for those who thought I was being melodramatic, you now know he was purely putting it in the right context.
Well, I'll tell you what, Scott. Once you crush these bastards, I'll fly out to Cali and really show you a good time.
All right. That would be outstanding. Thanks for all the support and helping us move the cause forward. And we appreciate it. We're doing it the just and right thing for the right reasons, and it's all about getting our freedoms back.
Absolutely. And, you know, we have a little bit of vested interest as well.
Well, that's just it. The bottom line is we're gonna get the world moving here because it's the right thing to do.
All right, then.
Thanks a million.
Bye-bye.
Bye now.
And again, that is a clip from the phony phone conversation in which the governor of Wisconsin was punked by a imposter pretending to be David Koch. I'm speaking with Bill Leaders, who's the news editor of the Isthmus, Madison's popular weekly paper. A couple of things came up in that. One, Ronald Reagan and that ahistorical reference, and two, essentially a bribe being offered by this billionaire who's the second biggest donor to the governor's campaign. Let's deal with the Ronald Reagan thing. How did that strike you?
Well, yes, obviously he sees himself as having a pivotal role in history, being the big guy who comes out, crushes the unions, and then the country and the states are the better for it. I don't think there's anything insincere about his belief that that the United States would be better without public employee unions, and that by crushing them, he will be doing a good thing for everyone. I don't think the majority of people in the country would agree with that, but I think Scott Walker genuinely believes it, and that's how he sees his mission here, is to, like Ronald Reagan, make a bold statement against unions, to really put them in their place, to really strip them of their power, so that they're no longer in the way. As for the last part of the call, you know, to me, I'm not going to say that, you know, there was a bribe there. I think that's maybe taking that part of the exchange too far. What it says to me, though, is when a caller says to you, you know, go out there and crush the bastards, you know, and you respond kind of like, yeah, sure, thank you, absolutely, rather than say, hey, you know, that's not really my goal here, or don't call the people of my state bastards. You know, there are other things in that conversation, too, where he put down newscasters at MSNBC as bastards. There's something there about David Axelrod, the president's chief advisor, in which the fake caller calls him a son of a bitch, and our governor, Walker, agrees with that characterization. You know, it really opens a lot of people's eyes, I think, to just how profoundly unappealing Scott Walker.
Well, to my mind, Bill Leaders, it reveals, I think, a mindset in the right wing of the Republican Party, manifested by the Tea Party, and that is that they're not interested in a debate between liberalism and conservatism. They want to crush the liberals. They want to take no prisoners. This is a kind of totalitarian Republican Party we're talking about.
I think that's true, and it really startles me to hear myself say that, because last week I would have told you talk like that is hyperbole. I just came from the state assembly chamber where I watched the debate go for a couple of hours, and the Democrats have been offering all sorts of amendments to tweak the governor's budget bill. One by one they have been shot down. They've been tabled on party line votes. There was an amendment this morning while I was there. The governor wants to change it so that he can sell the state's power plants to whoever without even conducting an audit to see what they're worth. And the Democrats said, hey, you know, we know that you want to sell these things to the Koch brothers, but at least let's have an audit so we're sure to get a fair price. It's just a sound business practice. You know, can't you agree with us even on this? And like every one of the other more than 100 amendments that the Democrats have proposed in the Assembly, it got shot down on a party line vote.
I think a lot of people recognize, Bill Leaders, just in closing, that the subtext of this attack on the unions is a way to defund the Democratic Party. And even on Fox, one of their commentators said that, you know, the 9 of the top donors to political campaigns in this country give to Republicans, and then the next 3 are unions. And if you break the unions, you and the Democratic Party's ability to compete in elections. So that seems to be, again, ties into a totalitarian mindset where they don't want to run against...
Yeah, but note even that the Fox News commentator, I think that was Shepard Smith,
sure.
who made that point, didn't think that was a good idea.
Right.
He dissented from the notion, which is so popular among some of his other Fox colleagues, that it really is a good idea to strip the nation of the ability to have a functioning two-party system.
Well, on that note, let's stay in touch, Bill Leed. It's your town and your state. It's as I say, it's the canary in the coal mine when it comes to a kind of right-wing takeover of America, if I can be allowed a little hyperbole. Thanks for joining us.
It is hyperbole, and I'm sorry that it's true.
Again, I've been speaking with Bill Leeders, who is the news editor of the Isthmus, Madison's popular weekly paper. He's also been elected president of the Wisconsin Freedom of Information Council, a statewide group devoted to protecting public access to meetings and records. And he's written several books, the latest of which is Watchdog, 25 Years of Muckraking and Rabble-Rousing.